Anyway, this is a strange little story in some ways, because if you read the beginning of chapter 11, it's worse than we imagine, because Jesus, I chose the title Jesus Showed Up, sort of honoring Mary Don's sermon last week about showing up, but he didn't show up in time. And in fact, he was deliberately late. So he gets the word, he waits 2 days, and then he goes up north. And then he circles back and comes to see Lazarus, heads that direction. And so I don't know about the math there, but what I do know is that in that context, they bury right on the day the person dies. They don't have a period of being embalmed or anything like that. They put them in the tomb, and then what happens is that the body sits in that tomb and it rots, like they said. And after a year's time, they go back in and they gather the bones together and put them in a little bin and keep them there in the cave. So it's absolutely normal because they are familiar with opening up caves where people have been buried. And the stench being there, because it often might be a family cave, and one person dies, and soon after, perhaps another one does. So they know that after 4 days already, the place will be smelling strongly. And they know that they sent word here to Jesus. And they think he could have come easily enough. But he didn't. He chose to wait. And I don't know if you're familiar with that term or phrase, lollygag or lollygag or some kind of thing like that. But it seems to me he did. He was distracted, did other things. And the thing that's crazy is when he goes up north, they sit there, the people with him say, "Are you crazy? Because you were nearly stoned a few days ago. There are people out to get you right now. And yet, rather than go and stay in an area where it's relatively safe, you head into this opposition, risking perhaps your life and choosing away from going and seeing this person." That they speculate about, saying, "Look, he could have saved them. Once he gets there," they say, "Oh, Jesus is coming now that he's dead." So it's a story that gets us into some kind of speculation. What was Jesus doing? What was he thinking? Why did he show up and show up late? Why didn't he respond more quickly? Now, I've spoken on this passage a number of times before, even in the last year. But I just, one of the books that I received from Mennonite Publishing House is called Blessed is the Body. And the subtitle is Disability Justice and the Community of Christ. The author is Tatum Tricarico. I never heard of her. But anyway, her disability is blindness. She's had a slow loss of her sight. And so she is writing about. It's a devotional for the period of Lent, And she's going over, she happens to be working on this passage this day. And one of the things that jumped out at me here that I want to read for you is a perspective. It's one of the reasons I think we need multiple perspectives when we read scripture. Because when we read it from our own point of view, we're blind to many things. And in this particular case, this is something I've been blind to. It says, in today's scripture, Mary repeats Martha's words, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Jesus had wanted to see Mary, but when she gets there, she doesn't even give him time to speak. She repeats her sister's words that let Jesus know what they think should have happened. It's beautiful that these sisters, who have already named Jesus as the Son of God, still take space to tell them how they wished he would have done things differently. You know, when I don't know, when you're annoyed with God, what do you say? Do you hold on to it? You say, why? I think some of us say we don't have a right to be angry with God. You know, one of the people who has been, we've been visiting a year ago, as she was dealing with her illness, she said she was angry with God. And she had just recently started on hospice care. And one of the hospice people said to her, no, you shouldn't be angry with God. And I said, hold the phone, you can be angry as heck with God. The Bible is full of lament. The Bible is full of people coming before God and saying, this is not right. This is not what we expected. This is not what we had hoped for. And the amazing thing is, God doesn't say, oh, be quiet. You have no right to that. No, Jesus accepts it. God accepts it. We are free to bring our lament before God. We are free to expect a res to express all kinds of disappointment with God. And so we have these two sisters who've already named Jesus as the Son of God. So there's no contradiction between proclaiming belief in Jesus and at the same time disappointment, sadness, failed expectation. The two are not contradictory. So they say, they rec or she says, they recognize his power and love so much that they know that if Jesus had come earlier, Lazarus would have lived. But they also trust and respect Jesus enough to say what they were thinking. So actually, to express our disappointment, to express our anger, our sense of failure and loss to Jesus is respecting Jesus. So it's trusting Jesus enough to share our deepest feelings, even if it's in anger. But they also trust and respect him enough to say what they were thinking and to advocate. This is the bit that was new for me. And to advocate for what they wish would have happened to their brother. They face the power that they know could have changed things, and they advocate for better. They know how sacred Lazarus' life was, and they advocated with that in mind. She goes on to say, these women are examples of advocacy and allyship. They know what their brother's needs were, and they name it. Even in the face of a friend, even in the face of God, allyship means coming along those on the margins and advocating with them, especially as someone who is not marginalized in the same way. This is a core to the experience of both the disabled people and to Christians. As Christians, we are called to love our neighbor, which often means advocating for them when they need someone alongside them. Disabled people are both in need of allies, and some of these best, and are they are both in need of allies and are some of the best allies I've ever found. So what's she saying? She's saying that the two sisters, what they're doing is they're actually taking Lazarus' desire, his plea that they know he would have had, would have been to be healed. They take that plea and they go to Jesus with that, accompanying him. They're advocates. They're standing as a lawyer of sorts to argue with Jesus before him. I've never thought of that as what they're doing there. But once you do think about it, it has all kinds of ramifications for how we think about our prayers. When a person is sick, I often just pray for God to heal the person or bring healing to the situation or whatever that is. But what if we take it a step further and we say, we know God, that you are the source of life. You are the source of well-being. You are the source of compassion and love. And we come before you representing this person who is ill or this situation that is falling apart. And we stand before you to say, this is not right. This is not what you want for this situation. This is not what you want for this person. This is not what you want for this conflict. To me, it changes you the way I think about the prayer. Going before Jesus, going before God from a position of advocacy for what you expect. Now, that's very much or what you had expected. It's very similar, for me at least, to that whole situation on the road to Emmaus. Anybody right off think of what happens on the road to Emmaus? The two disciples are walking. Jesus has died, and now they're saying he's risen from the dead. And the disciples are telling this to Jesus, saying, you must be the only person in all of Jerusalem who hasn't seen these things. And they tell the whole story. And then Jesus is going to go on. And they say, no, it's late. Come, eat at our house. And Jesus stays. And it's in the breaking of the bread that those two disciples recognize the face of Jesus. Now, and then Jesus disappears. But when they met Jesus, they didn't recognize him. And because of that, they petitioned. They said what the whole problem was. We had expected that he would be the salvation of Israel. And it was a total fail. He died. And then beyond that, we don't understand anything at all because now he's raised. They say he is raised. And what are we to do with that? We don't know what to do with resurrected people. So here again, they already saw Lazarus. They didn't know what to do with that story fully. Now you get to Jesus on the road to Emmaus, encounters them, He hears their cry. You know, that song, the first song we sang, Lord, hear our prayer, Lord, hear our prayer. It's, and come to us. If we do not position God, then we've missed some of the point of our prayers. We've got to bring ourselves, our whole situation, even our grievances, we bring before Him. So, what do we do with this? Well, my mind has been kind of expansive on this all week because I've thought about various parts of the journey. You know, we bring before God our lament, and right now there are just so many different things to be concerned about. You know, we've got a political situation that's in it's hard to know what to think of. We've got a militarization of the situation. We've got messages coming to us on both sides. It's a tension because, on the one hand, we talk about illegals. And then there are people who say, well, nobody's illegal. That's a false concept. It's undocumented. I greatly prefer the term undocumented because illegal puts it on the person in a certain sense as if they're to be despised. Undocumented means that they're on a journey towards documentation. So for me, it's a semantic thing, but it also is transformational about how we think about the situation. So we can also apply it to the environment. How do we petition God for the kind of I don't know if you've seen this little ad or post, whatever you want to call it, but there's this picture of sludge water pumping into the James River somewhere up in Richmond or something. I'm not really sure where it is. And, but it is just not at all clean water. And there's a law or a, they're asking you to contribute or petition for this particular thing. And the thing we know about so much of the environment is what we need to do is stop polluting. If we stop polluting, the situation can heal itself. God has designed it in such a way that it can thrive when it's not being destroyed. And we notice that when we dig up a space in the yard or something like that, and right away new things start growing, and you see life in the grass or in the ground and so forth. So life, both for people and for our earth, has a longing for itself. And it wants to move in that direction. This plant has probably dropped lots of seeds. It's dying, but it's already reaching out for the future. And that's just how life is. The earth doesn't have people to stand as the earth has us to stand before God and pray as allies. And, as this author is saying, she sees Mary and Martha and the community around them as allies who come before Jesus to pray for the healing of Lazarus and the raising of Lazarus. And we're invited then to be also advocates, not just for those of us who are sick or unwell. For all of us, we need prayer in some way or another, but we're all invited to advocate for the health of those around us and to ask God for healing. none of our requests, none of our demands, none of our statements of expectation is invalid before God. And I guess then I really only have one point here. And that is that we have, it is a sign of belief and respect in God's power when we come before Jesus, we come before God in petition for the kind of world we want to see. And we believe that God desires for all people. So when we align what we're calling forth with what God seems to be desiring for the earth, then we are working in that direction of God's redemption and healing. So I'll leave it at that.